And we're away. I'm just going to have a look there. We just may as well just kick off early. Can everybody hear me in the chat okay there? And we're off. There's me. There's Stevie Malcolm, my guy in the comments there, telling me that we're off. So we are back once again with more of Endeavour's classic movies. And today we're going to take a dive into Paul Verhoeven's mind-boggling, weird, and crazy Starship Troopers. Just a little bit of housekeeping. I haven't got Entropy up there because I don't do enough live streaming to make it worthwhile. Because you've got like $100, and then you have to get paid out. But I never live stream, so and I almost never see it. But I've got the coffee pot there, and I'll refresh it, or at the end. And we'll see how we get on. So anyway, how are you doing, Endeavor?
I'm doing great, enjoying my white boy summer, and I'm looking forward to the stream today.
What actually is White Boy Summer? I've never understood the meme, to be honest.
Oh, it's just like throwback to the 70s, the 80s, where you'd see the guys on the surfboards and listening to music. It's basically just the meme is just saying like enjoy the weather, enjoy the season, have fun, and kind of don't let all the black pills get you down. It's kind of just taking back the summer, say something we're going to enjoy.
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, we've had a good bit of weather here. I'm so happy that the stream's actually worked and it hasn't gone to an old video or something that I'm like, I'm not, now I feel relieved and I'm just kind of easing into shooting the shit a little bit. But well, yeah, where it's we've had a heat wave. Yeah, I've been as they used to say in the old days, I've been sweating like a fat lass in a chippy.
Well, I mean, I had to turn off the air conditioning in my apartment for, well, not air conditioning, the fan in my apartment to record. So it's pretty hot in here too.
All right, so let's jump in. So the Starship Troopers, I was surprised because you weren't that impressed with it, or what?
Well, what I'll say is that it's an entertaining movie. It's an entertaining kind of comedy action parody. I don't think it's a bad movie per se, and I know I'm going to get dragged over the coals for saying this because a lot of our guys really like this movie. I thought it was entertaining, but I wouldn't consider it to be like a great film. So of the ones we've reviewed so far, it was probably my least favorite. But having said that, I do think it's still good fun, and I still think there's interesting themes to get into.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting themes. I mean, I've been binge reading Warhammer books, and Robert A. Heinlein's book Starship Troopers is kind of, you can see that it's the sort of inspiration for a lot of Warhammer stuff. And I'm about 70 pages into the book. And there's a I mean I'll get into this a little bit more further on in the stream, but there's a lot more political theory and military training than the book. The books haven't been mentioned whatsoever. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. People in the chat on, I love it. I love it as well. I know Sargon did a video like back when he was really interesting, and he would like do big deep dive videos. Sargon did like a 1 hour and 45 minutes take on this video, which I think we'll get into that later. I mean, I wish he would do stuff like that these days instead of just reading the news. But whatever. I mean, I'm going to assume most people know the gist of Starship Troopers. It's set in the future, and I think it's like the 23rd century, but it's not really specific. And what they've got is a one-world government called the Terran Foundation, and its political structure is kind of weird because you have to join the military and be engaged in civic duty in order to be able to hold political power, in order to be able to vote. And then you can be a merchant, you can be a capitalist, but you don't you if you haven't actually participated in civic life in an official manner, you won't have political power. So the capitalist merchant class, they've got the right to earn money, run businesses, and all of the rest of it, but they can't meddle in politics. So straight away, it's got these interesting little sort of twists. And then we follow Johnny Rico, who's a kind of real, like he's a real Chad, He's like Paul Verhoeven. He actually plucked the cast from like low grade American like trashy 90s television. He wanted them to look as beautiful as possible. And everybody in the chat's all mentioning the women in it. Denise Richards is there. They're gorgeous. They really are like these kind of ubermensch that he's got in there. There's the main characters, the main stars. And so then what happens is you've got this one world government, and then there's bugs from another part of the galaxy. It's just completely preposterous. But the bugs from a planet called Klendathu, they end up having a war. And why and who was responsible for the war is where it gets interesting, because it's reported what you've got in the movie is these like sort of news segments which are a little bit tongue in cheek, but it's kind of like happy clappy sort of fascist police state kind of stuff, and where everything's grand. And they point out there's a little clip that what they call Mormon extremists have settled in the bug zone, in the quarantine zone where they're not supposed to go. So who actually is responsible for the war is a sort of debate point. And that's kind of where we... And then eventually, it is ridiculous because the bugs have got the ability to cast asteroids with a spore on, like across the galaxy. I don't know. Maybe that gets explained in the book, but it doesn't in the movie. Like, so that's kind of the general gist of it, and it comes across as this big, loud, stupid movie. But I mean, I was doing a little bit of research on YouTube, and a lot of people, there's a lot of videos like it's called things like "What the hell is this movie about?" Because it is like what you're going to say is like it's so ironic, and it's so it tongue in cheek, or is it? Is it having a go at fascism? Is it a celebration of fascism? And all of these different themes. So that's kind of the intro to the movie itself. I'd also add that it's Paul Verhoeven's, the way I see it, Paul Verhoeven did three great science fiction movies, and you can think of them, I think, like a trilogy. So you've got RoboCop, 1987, and then you've got Total Recall, which is 1990 with Arnie, and then the third one is Starship Troopers. So you've got that like a sci-fi trilogy of, and the RoboCop and Total Recall have got that same sort of ironic, weird humor to them. So that's kind of the basic pitch of the movie. Would you agree with that, Endeavor?
Yeah, I would. I guess the one thing that we could start on is the contrast between fascism and neoliberalism, because on paper, if you're just reading it, like the book, perhaps I haven't read the book, but I know you've started to read it. You'd say, well, this is a fascist regime. You know, they talk at the very beginning of the movie about how citizenship is only limited to those with who have done military service, how democracy has failed, and that they need this stronger form of government to survive the dangers that the galaxy poses to Earth. But the thing is that there is a really big contradiction in this, because aesthetically, spiritually, the entire world is liberal. Like one of the things that I noted is that not only how liberal it is, it's 1990s liberal, as in like very specific to this one era. I'd say that to sum up the world in Starship Trooper, what is it called? The United Citizens Federation? Is this the name of the?
Yeah.
Because one thing that people might not realize, they'll think that that Johnny Rico and these guys are American. They're not. They're from Argentina. They're from Buenos Aires in Argentina. So what it seems is that 400 years in the future, the entire world is America now. So it's almost like a 1990s America has been frozen in time and transported 400 years into the future. One small detail I noticed, and this was just like, it just puts the movie in the era so much, is that, you know, that like kind of football-like game they're playing, American football-like game they're playing, yeah, at the beginning. Well, they're wearing hockey helmets, and the brand of hockey helmets they're wearing is called Jofa. And this used to be – some NHL players used to wear these helmets in the 90s. So players like Jaromir Jagr or Teemu Selanne used to wear this very unique brand of hockey helmet in the 90s called Jofa. And it was – and the ones that they're wearing is the exact same design. But this has been discontinued for like – almost 20 years now, and this movie that's supposed to be taking place like in the distant future, they're wearing 1990s hockey helmets in it. You can just see that everywhere.
Yeah, and Verhoeven deliberately went for that. There was a show around. I mean, I'm showing my age, and there's probably a few in the chat will get it. But there was this horrible American show in the 90s called Beverly Hills 9210, I think it was. And I never watched it. But, well, if it was on in the background, I'd have a look because it had, like, sexy women in it. And Verhoeven specifically went for that look. He wanted the best possible looking cast you can imagine. It's like it hasn't just been Argentina hasn't. It doesn't just look like America. Like, it's 1990s, very white, sort of waspish America as well. But let's jump in, because I want to if you look at the symbols and everything, it is kind of like sending up fascism. But in the audio commentary, which I listened to the other day, the writer Ed Neumeier and Paul Verhoeven, it's one of them ones where the movie plays away and then they talk and discuss the movie. And I think the voiceover commentary was from about 2005. And it's quite clear that the writer Neumeier, he wanted to have like a much more like sort of parody of fascism. But when they're discussing it, Verhoeven, he kind of poo-poos that, and he's saying, yeah, like, I get that. I get all of that, but it's been done so many times before. You know, it's kind of hackneyed to do that. And if we look at the world today, the country which is actually all about the military and all about this kind of propaganda is America itself. And this gets more interesting, because it turns out they were reading the neocon manual, Project for the New American Century, which kind of outlined what America's foreign policy was going to be going forward. And so my reading, and I did a spicy blog post of this a long time ago, one of my first ever blog posts, and I called it Starship Troopers, Neocons in Outer Space. And when you begin to look at it again through that lens, it becomes a lot more interesting what it is that you're actually seeing. I mean, somebody in the chat was saying it could have been that the hit on Buenos Aires could have been an inside job. But nevertheless, what you're seeing is a sort of a global homo form of imperialism. And when you look at the bugs themselves, you look at where they live in the desert. And then, you know, not to spoil it too much, but there's the famous scene. It became a meme. There's a lot of memes came out of this movie. And you know that just look at the brain bug at the end, where like he's literally being dragged out of his cave. And everybody's like whooping and horrowing, it could be just Osama bin Laden or Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein or whoever else the American Empire has on the hit list. So this is kind of my reading of Starship Troopers. I think, the book itself, it seems to be a lot less where it isn't like it doesn't have that irony to it, but I think there's a you can say the book is more a serious kind of investigation and defense of like a fascist political philosophy, and then they have set out to kind of lampoon that and then discovered along the way that it would actually be a lot more fun to have a pop at American neoconservatism, which was just coming in at that stage. What's really weird, of course, is that this came out like 4 years before 9/11 and all of that kind of thing. But you can see the liberalism and you can see the political correctness like the over the top political correctness in like the movie. I mean, the men and the women like take showers together. I don't think we're even there yet in like 2021, are we?
Oh yeah, that was another thing that really crossed my mind is how like just how nonchalantly the men and women are just showering together in the military. It seems like I guess it's kind of like an inversion of today where kind of everyone is feminized, all the men are soy boys and stuff. Instead, what you have in Starship Troopers is that all the women are essentially men. But I mean they still look feminine, they still are beautiful, but then they're all like as masculine and as strong as all the men. You know, I guess it's a maybe a nod to the milder form of political correctness you saw in the 90s, because back then I don't think you saw the stuff that was quite as extreme as you see today. You know, the political correctness back then would be you'd get the black scientist guy, or you might get the female hard cop or something like that. And I guess Starship Troopers is trying to put that like at the forefront. But yeah, the demographics of the movie is really it's something that definitely crossed my mind too.
You see it in the diversity as well. Like the man behind the Klendafu drop, which is one of my, I mean, before we get too far into the politics, it is amazing. I will say that the special effects have held up really well, like really well. The sequences of the battleships and the bugs, the way the bugs look, it looks great. It stands up perfectly. And I will say that one of my favorite ever action sequences is the Klendathu drop, where it's just so high octane, insane energy, gung ho, let's do it. Where they're dropping down in the pods and they're throwing up, and like all hell's breaking loose because the bugs are firing up. Sort of what do you call them things where you shoot it up and like anti-flak type things, and they're taking out the battleships, and he's saying like, remember your training and you will get out of this alive. And then all the pods are just being blown to pieces left, right, and center. Like it's somebody said it's the cleverest dumb film ever, because that actually, it's weird, because on the one hand the film is so snarky and satirical and ironic, but there's some of the scenes in it like really where that kind of drops away. And I think the Klendathu drop scene where they all get massacred as soon as they land, and that's what I was going to come to, where they replace the military chief of staff or whatever with this kind of really overweight like black woman, and she's it's weird because they were aware that they're lampooning almost like the sort of rainbow flag LGBT American military, which would set off on the forever wars in the desert. Like that really is my reading, but how they could get it so spot on is crazy. It's really spooky when you look at so many of the themes in it.
I mean, one of them is the enemies themselves. They're literally called the bugs, and they're as unhuman as possible. And they even have a line in there that a guy says the only good bug is a dead bug. And I think this probably is it has a lot to do with neoconservatism's tendency to dehumanize the other. So, you know, that could be, I don't know, it could be the fascists, or it could be the communists, or the Islamists, or, you know, today it's, I don't know, the racists or something like that. I find that like liberalism and neoconservatism really has this way of like dehumanizing its enemies, and like basically justifying any kind of violence against them on that grounds. And, you know, maybe that's what the director's going for with this, because I mean, I'm not about to come out here and say that, oh, you know, what about the bugs perspective? You know, maybe they were the good guys. I mean, come on, they're just like, they're bugs, for God's sake. They're just these creepy space aliens. But I guess that is kind of the intention of the director, is that by creating this enemy that's like so unhuman, you don't even like, if you kind of just have no way of sympathizing with them whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, Simple Pirate in the chat says, are the bugs communists or Muslims? Well, they're both. They are whoever the American Empire wants to demonize and spread propaganda about as a convenient enemy. So what happens in the so it could be Wignats, or it could be communists, like genuine communists, of course, not the subverted kind of type that we've seen today. It could be whatever the American Empire designates as an enemy of the time. So throughout the 2000s, it would have been the Middle East and all that was going on there. And so what happens is the asteroid hits, and it's the equivalent again of say 9/11, or you could say Pearl Harbor. Because what's interesting is that, I mean, Rob Yeager's done some good deep dives into this as well, which I haven't watched years ago. But this is where you get into some of the long grass, because Carmen, who the sexy Denise Richards, she's training on a spaceship, a big battleship, and they have a very near miss with the asteroid that's on its way to Earth, and it lands in Earth and wipes out Buenos Aires and a load of other places. So this is like the official declaration of war, and this is where people have pointed out, like, it's funny how they didn't like warn Earth and say there's something on the way, you've got to do something about it. Because in World War II, it's not, and I'm going to be careful, but there's this sort of conspiracy theory about World War II where the British Admiralty and the American intelligences, they knew the Japanese were on their way to Pearl Harbor, and they didn't do anything about it because they thought, well, once that, they'll hit Pearl Harbor, but then America's going to go fully mobilized into the war. And so this is kind of the interesting take on Starship Troopers. It's a kind of neoconservative American empire, and they say it specifically on the audio commentary. So I can kind of appreciate it, because we're all kind of, we get it, like they've kind of done the fascism thing. Unfortunately, like it didn't stop what happened. It's more like it predicted it.
So things like 9/11, I kind of thought of the same thing, but then you realize that this is actually 4 years before 9/11 really happened. They always kind of have to have this this one event that becomes one that you have no choice but to go to war after. So after Pearl Harbor, you have no choice but to go to war. After 9/11, you'd have no choice. So once the bugs destroy Buenos Aires, then all bets are off, and then you're going to war, and you're only the only thing you'll accept is the complete extermination of all the bugs and the subjugation of that planet. And of course, that's something that's happened a lot throughout history. It's kind of like getting that one event that just gets everyone to invest in a war, and it is really effective, which is why a lot of times there's these conspiracy theories, some of them may be true or not, that were some of these events either planned or allowed to happen in order to in order to justify going to war.
I've got to be careful here, because I'm on YouTube. You're always walking on ice, especially with these subjects. But I'll just sprinkle this into the conversation. Just look at the news. Just look at what's going on. Are we not in a war against the bug now? Are we not? Or is it not all systems go? Do your duty. I'm doing my duty in the war against the bug, like right now, in the here and now. It's the same bloody thing again. Gotta be careful. There's an external enemy, and we've all got to get on board. Don't be a traitor. Do your civic duty, or you'll be ostracized and kicked out. So it is like the same thing, like over and over again. Another great point is when they're on their way to the Clendathu drop, and you get the journalist. I mean, this is one thing I will say, like the Terran Federation may well be like a one world government sort of weird fascistic kind of system, but at least the journalist like asked an awkward question, and he said, so they're on the way there, and he turns to Johnny Rico and he says, some people have pointed out that the bugs are actually defending themselves because humans went into their territory first. And Johnny Rico just turns around and he gets all excited and he says, I'm from Buenos Aires and I say kill them all. So it's what's happened, of course, is that the propaganda has taken hold into this like bloodlust, where you don't think about it. They are the enemy, and they have to be utterly, completely annihilated. I mean, there's one scene where it's ridiculous, because they've got one scene where they've got loads of little kids out on the street, like stamping on bugs and cockroaches, like these little normal sized bugs. And then the mother's in the background, and she's like jumping around, like she's really like kind of psychotic that they're so happy that the kids are being taught to stamp on bugs. And it takes the place of the enemy. I mean, it's kind of like if you've got a one world government in this sort of Carl Schmitt type thing, how do you then designate the enemy? You know, the political. And so what they have done is kind of offshore it, because you need to keep your country in check, and your side of this to stop them asking questions. It's actually really handy to designate an external enemy, whatever that enemy happens to be.
Yeah, there's a concept called the moral equivalency to war. Have you heard of that before?
No.
So a moral equivalency to war, it's a concept that says that this is a fight that kind of supersedes all other formalities in society. So for example, you could say that an actual war, of course, is when war happens, then the war supersedes everything else. They have the right to suspend all civil liberties. They have the right to change the laws. They have the right to supersede what was previously in place, because the war is the most important thing. And that's the one thing that needs to be fought. But it's interesting when you look at the same kind of mentality, the moral equivalency to war, and you apply it to other kind of struggles. Like you mentioned, the bug that they're saying that we have to fight today, because today we are in a supposedly liberal society. These Western countries are supposed to be these liberal regimes with civil liberties and individual rights and all this stuff. But they've now created this one big threat that is the moral equivalency to war, which they can use to suspend all the rest of their promises. All the rest of the promises that they've made to the populace, all the promises of civil liberties, all that goes out the window, because we now have this one threat that is as big of a war as a war, and we have to put all of our resources towards that, and that supersedes everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to point out that Ratchek when they're Johnny Rico and Carmen, they're still in school, and he's giving them these lectures. And I thought it was a very interesting little thing that he pointed out, that the reason, I think the book goes into a lot more detail on this stuff, but the what he says is that this, in the past, the social scientists, which is the age we're in now, they brought the world to the brink of destruction, and it was necessary to create the Terran Federation, the one world government, and like completely overhaul how politics and how they thought about politics and everything, because of the social scientists bringing them to the very brink of destruction. And so, I mean, I've got in my notes as well, you can see what I'm thinking of, like climate change would be another one that speaks to what you were just saying there. So if in the climate change is another way, another excuse for them to say, well, there's this big problem, and these are the measures that we're going to have to take to deal with it. So again, you can see it again and again. I think this is the proper reading of what the hell this movie's about.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that they even use that with other things today, like, you know, with a lot of people, like, they think that even like racism is the moral equivalency to war. So like that, basically, if somebody's identified as being a quote unquote racist, then that person like is unhuman, and any kind of like actions taken against them are justified on the fact that they're the absolute most epitome of evil, and they and all the rights that society has no longer applies to them. And we all know how loosely that definition is thrown around today. But yeah, it's another thing that I think current society has designated kind of the moral equivalency to war, that they have all these outs to get around, get providing you with the rights that society supposedly claims that you're supposed to have.
I mean, I will say there's just to get back to the sort of the action in the movie. One thing I will give them, you can see that it is subversive and it is like a satire of America, but you can see that it comes from a certain place because for all its like irony and the jokes and stuff, the actual killings, the actual violence in it is really quite brutal and sadistic. Like it isn't glorified in any way, and you can see that deep down they hate the violence. And Paul Verhoeven's got a track record of doing this. I mean, people will say that his movies glorify violence. Like RoboCop is an unbelievably violent movie. But it's hard to, you know when Dizzy got like pierced by the insect and thrown around, and you can see like the blood coming out, and she's dying slowly and telling Johnny that she loves him. Like, I don't think anybody was actually laughing then. I think they're making a wider point about like, for all the propaganda and all the gung ho stuff, like violence is gruesome and it is rotten, you know.
I guess this is a point I might kind of disagree on. I mean, certainly the scenes are like really violent, but I guess the problem for me was that with the irony of the film, it was kind of lost on me. So like I had a bit of a difficult time, you know, sympathizing with the lieutenant when he had like that really dramatic death scene, because like, you know, if the entire movie's ironic and it's all kind of silly, I don't really like feel like a very deep connection to the characters dying. So like and I guess like that to me is kind of the I guess for me that would be what makes it more impactful, is, you know, is this battle actually meaningful? So like, you know, I could compare it to like the scene of the Battle of Fredericksburg and Gods and Generals. So when the guys die, they don't like get their like they don't get impaled or something like that. They kind of just get shot and fall down. But I guess I feel like a lot deeper of a connection to that, because I actually feel like this is something a lot more real being portrayed. Whereas in Starship Troopers, I mean, yeah, like it is extremely violent, but at the same time, you know, we were just watching some like 1990s like do you want to know more like parody sitcom thing, and you know they were just a few minutes ago like, you know, joking in the shower together with, you know, the men and women nonchalantly showering together. It's just, you know, in from my perspective, that message, if that was the message, was kind of lost on me, because like I have a hard time being invested in something that's that ironic, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, it's what we were saying, and we've touched on before. It is that kind of the irony of it is very 1990s. And Paul Verhoeven was like the worst for it. You know, even in RoboCop and these other, there's a very dark humor to it, and there is an element where they want to have their cake and eat it, so they do want to make this kind of over the top comedic kind of satire, but then they'll portray like the deaths as like really horrible and gruesome to shock you, and I think it's right what you're saying. It is kind of like, well, hang on a minute, am I supposed to laugh at this? Am I supposed to be horrified by this?
Yeah, I guess that's why like the scene of the drop onto the planet, I didn't feel the same amount of tension as maybe you did for that scene, because I can think of a lot of other scenes from different films that I felt a lot more exhilarated by. I mean, it's certainly shot fantastically. It certainly is shot well, but the thing is, it's like, you know, it is kind of this hokey like sci-fi parody world, and it's just like, you know, can I really feel that much tension for it?
I think it's a generational difference. So that I'm obviously like a 90s child very much. I came of age in the 90s. So I was absolutely saturated in the kind of humor of Starship Troopers. And you're like a young millennial. So there was a new sort of earnestness that came in. And it's the, like, all as always, like the Gen X just kind of laughing at everything. And so you look at what the movies of the 90s, and you'll see this, you know, you'll see like Nicolas Cage as an action hero, And you know it's like ironic. Like Nicolas Cage in something like Con Air, it is like, again, you do think, well, how am I supposed to take this? It's like everything's got an inside joke to it. Nothing's really in earnest. And yeah, that was the 90s. And you see it in something like Con Air or like Starship Troopers. But when you get into the noughties, into the new millennium, you get the stuff like The Dark Knight, which is like really serious and poor-faced. That's like, so I think there's a sort of generational difference there.
Yeah, that could be the case.
So what I wanted to move on to was like Sargon's take on this, which was to go back, what he was trying to do in this huge video, which it's I think it's 3 or 4 years old now. Like I say, I did used to watch that stuff. I liked it. And so what he was trying to do was to say that actually, because this was when the alt-right was like really big and you know, getting a lot of big numbers and whatnot. And I think it was an attempt by him, because what they were doing, they wanted to take ownership of it. And they wanted to say Starship Troopers, the centrists then, that Starship Troopers, it isn't fascist at all. They are classic liberals. It's about a classic liberal society. And the argument would be that they still had the right to vote, whereas in a proper fascist society, that wouldn't be the case at all. And I thought, even back then, like I had this kind of take on it being a satire of neoconservatism. So I was like, yeah, like you're right, but for all the wrong reasons. Because what sort of classic liberalism ended up being was just a sort of war machine for global homo America.
Yeah, I haven't seen Sargon's video, but I think I actually agree with that take that Starship Troopers isn't fascist. It's a lot more classic liberal. And you can even see it in the demographics. It's the world as the centrists think it would work. They think that, you know, with getting rid of identity politics, everyone's going to be like this identical blank slate, interchangeable cog. And like, you know, there's not going to be any difference whatsoever between any of the races or genders. So yeah, I mean, it does seem like the civic nationalist power fantasy really of creating this post-racial, post-gender society. But then at the same time, they do kind of fit it in with the 1990s kind of delusion, whereas, you know, they thought that back then, but you have to understand though that these countries were still like overwhelmingly white. Most of the leading characters are still male. So, you know, there's this idea, I think, that America and Americanism has always had, that it's universalist, and they kind of think that all the world can become America. They just need liberalism and capitalism, and then the quality of life that white America has created can be brought to any part of the world. It's this really universalist worldview, but then at the same time, it's kind of a lie, because the American or British person, or whoever, like any kind of Westerner who thinks that, they still kind of envision there being this, you know, white American man who speaks English being the guy at the head of it all, when, you know, that's really just, that's certainly not going to be the case going forward. And you can even just look at the West today that, you know, that's not demographics in like pretty steady decline. And, you know, that this, the Americanism of the 90s, that's not spreading itself to the world. That's not the human norm. A lot of people around the world don't want that. So I think that maybe even on a few deeper levels, it kind of does, the movie kind of does show a lot of the delusions of the 1990s. I was thinking about Francis Fukuyama's End of History. And I think that really does fit in with the comment I made earlier that Starship Troopers is almost, if you froze 1990s America 400 years into the future and then made it the entire world, because the end of history that Francis Fukuyama wrote about in 1992, he said that liberalism and liberal democracy were the pinnacle of human development, and all that was going to happen left now that the Soviet Union was gone and communism had collapsed. Now it was now a unipolar world with America at the head. all that was left to happen was basically just liberalism spreading itself across the world and capitalism. Now, then everyone would be like a white American suburb in the 1990s, and that was just the future going forward. And I guess in some ways, Starship Troopers is what would happen if that actually came true. Whereas, 400 years later, it literally is still 1990s America everywhere in the world. I mean, including just with one thing I thought is that the aesthetics are almost like if you mixed Saved by the Bell with Aliens, you'd get Starship Troopers, because it has all the 1990s cliches of the high school, like with the coach, the pretty girls, the nerds, the jocks. I mean, it's all there. But then, I mean, you can even just look a few decades later. It looks dated today. Certainly America doesn't look like that anymore. And I guess it just it says a lot about the naivety of that view that people had in the 90s, that this is the end of history, this is as good as it's going to get, and it's only upwards from here.
Yeah, it's where it actually happened. It's where the American Empire did pause the entire world. Though I will say, what the big difference is that merchants have not been sort of cast out of having political power in any way, shape, or form in America, American liberal empire. The Port Film Co-op, thank you very much, for $5, I think this. I think one of the traps right-wing film culture gets into is only discussing film and political dimensions. What about film style and aesthetic? Well, the aesthetic is 90s America. We have kind of touched that. The aesthetic is Beverly Hills 90210 or Baywatch, but dressed up in armor and, being an immobile infantry in a space empire taking on giant insects. And the film style is satirical, and in a movie like Starship Troopers, though, like the real meat is the political side of it, I think, because the people who made it had politics in mind. They were going in there with a clear message, and some to play around and be a little bit mischievous with what it is they were trying to produce, right, Endeavor?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the directors and the people who made the film definitely were had the politics in mind. I definitely think that's the meat of the film, too.
Yeah, I mean, what I wanted to touch on as well was the in the book, which I've, like I say, I'm about 70 pages in. There's a hell of a lot of military training. I mean, I've read 7 Warhammer books since like this year. The first about 7 of the Horus Heresy Warhammer books, and there's an it's just constant action, and you can see the power suits were taken from Starship Troopers as well. And in Starship Troopers, the actual book, like 70 pages in, and it's graduated from college, and he's now in military training camp. But I think there's an interesting point to be made about what, and I think I understand why the Heinlein's book, if you read the Wikipedia page, like there's a lot of people who don't like it because it doesn't have that humor of the movie. And so it reads just like a sort of treatise on fascism or authoritarianism and this kind of stuff. And one of the things that they do is he makes a great point of stressing that the when Johnny Rico goes in, they are going to remove all of these things like paying bills and all of these mundane tasks are going to be taken away from the soldiers so they don't have to worry about them anymore. Just going to drink water here. So they don't have to worry about all these mundane, boring, normie tasks so they can breed a new higher man. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I also noticed about the film is that it does seem that the characters are really kind of flat. Like they don't really seem to have very much depth, and it almost seems as if they're kind of existing in this world that kind of really rewards conformity most. I specifically thought of the character of Johnny Rico. I thought he's kind of like the present day equivalent of the midwit. So somebody who's, you know, above average IQ, above average competence, but not like extraordinary. So, you know, he's good at accomplishing his task. He's good at military action. He's a very competent soldier. But at the same time, I didn't really think of him as, like, he's certainly no Lawrence of Arabia. He's certainly no warrior poet or anything like that. He really is kind of just somebody who's very useful in a system that rewards that rewards his kind of skills, but not really somebody with a lot more depth than that.
Yeah, and because what they're going for is the characters are supposed to be just like an ideal of an American sitcom or your standard American 90s Beverly Hills type thing. And so what they're saying is that the regime, like Ed Neumeier was specifically talking about fascism, and again, Paul Verhoeven pushes back and says, that's been done. It's kind of boring. I want to know, what I want to explore is the authoritarianism in America. And so what he's getting at is that even these bland characters that you can relate to from the like inoffensive American TV fodder, which it like sort of peddles around the world, it's like, you know, of the style of the 90s, like under the right conditions, they too can be turned into psychopaths. Like, and it's like, because they are bland, they are boring, they are, you've seen this American archetype a million times before. Now let's kind of play around with that and subvert it and make them, you know, we're going to see it where they get their heads, like a tube stuck in his head and have his brains sucked out, or he has to shoot his commanding officer. He sees his girlfriend get impaled and thrown around, all of this kind of thing. And so he's kind of subverting a trope there. And he's saying all of these characters, all of these tropes that, you know, we're going to play around with them. It is typical 90s.
Yeah, and I guess another contrast with fascism is that, of course, one thing is, it is true that it was a very military... It was very militaristic, and they put a lot of emphasis on military valor. But you'd also think that there'd be a lot with under something like fascism. There's a lot more emphasis on aesthetics as well. Like you could think of someone like Porsche being a very important man. You know, he was a creator of cars. But with Starship Trooper, I mean, it seems like they don't really put very much emphasis on any kind of spiritual or any kind of cultural foundation for the. What's it called? UCF, United Citizens Foundation Federation. What's the name? What's the name of the faction that they belong to again? I can't remember.
Well, Johnny Rico goes into the mobile infantry.
Yeah.
And then Carmen becomes a pilot. I don't know specifically. They're in different factions. The actual Federation, it's called the Terran Federation.
Okay, the Terran Federation. It doesn't seem to really have any kind of coherent cultural, religious, or spiritual foundation. It does basically just seem to be, it seems to be naked militarism, or I guess just judging by its aesthetics, just consumption and materialism. So it doesn't really. I'd say that's one thing that really does distinguish it from fascism and pushes a lot more towards neoconservatism is that it really is kind of a lot more materialistic and a lot more materialistic kind of society rather than one that actually is kind of founded in some kind of spirit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you don't even get that much of a glimpse into the materialist sort of side of it either, because
I just assume that because of the aesthetics, but you know, you never really hear anything about what's the culture supposed to be like.
And even the uniforms look crap. Like they haven't even got proper decent uniforms, and they've got their symbol is a sort of cross between an eagle and a bomber, but it looks like it's got really soft edges, and it just looks terrible. It just looks like a really bad design. And so again, they haven't given you any kind of cool fascistic symbology and anything like that. Like everything's crap. Everything's naff. I mean, I'll point out as well that it's surprising because you'll notice that the pilots are mainly women. That's in the book as well, because it's supposedly women have got higher spatial awareness or something like that. They've got some. There's a female instinct, which means that they're better at flying planes. I mean, another thing that we haven't even touched on is Carl, who goes in to become like a psychic, and this is sort of like the elite intelligence squad. So if this was Warhammer, he would be on his way to becoming like the Inquisition, and he's dressed up like a Gestapo agent as well. And so they're training people to read minds and all of this kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that was Neil Patrick Harris's character, right?
Yeah.
So he was a he had psychic abilities, and he became an officer because of that. He became like in the high echelon position in the military because he had a special ability to he had the special psychic ability, and that made him a lot more useful for the military. It is interesting, the one scene at the end where he said that he used his psychic ability to tell Johnny Rico that Carmen was still alive and that he should go save her. I don't know. I do wonder though, like what, if there are people in that society that have psychic abilities. They didn't really get into this, but I wonder what would they be using that? Would they be using that on the general populace? And you'd have to think that they probably would be, because you just see it with all the propaganda that they have. They kind of, you know, they sprinkle these like short, like commercials, throughout the movie where it says, would you like to see more? And they have this like menu which looks like it's like popping up on a TV screen of some kind. I wondered, like, would they be using that kind of psychic ability on general populace? And you have to imagine they probably would.
Yeah, they advertise it. If you think you're psychic, then maybe you are, and they want you to join up and become part of that. I forgot what the proper name of it is now. Basically, the psychic core intelligence, and they've also got like they actually have executions live on all networks. And you see this man, I forgot what he did, but it was some really petty crime. And the camera zooms in on his face, and you can see that he's like absolutely terrified. And it's got a picture of like a chair where they're going to inject him or gas him or something at whatever. And then the voiceover on the infomercial says like live on all networks at 9 p.m. tonight. Don't miss it. Like live execution. So, but it's because it's all so fake and all such a parody of American like 90s television that it comes across as really weird. I mean, those weird infomercials, they're also in Total Recall and RoboCop as well. The ones in RoboCop are like that a satellite in space misfired and burned up like 1,000 square hectares of Amazonian rainforest and all of this kind of thing. And then it's Total Recall there advertising how you can go on holiday the old-fashioned way or do like the mind-bending trip. So it is like that's why I think you can lump all three of these movies together like that. They even made two sequels, though they're not nearly as good. The second one is crap. Like the second, it's almost unwatchable. And then in the third one, Ed Neumeier came back to write it, and Johnny Rico comes back. It's the same same actor, Caspar Diem, I think he's called. And it's a kind of convoluted story, but they discover that there's actually a god bug on a remote moon somewhere, and it's like a mile long, and it's infecting the minds of humans to give them a religion, which would result in them worshipping the insects. So that then humans reinvent Christianity, like what you were saying about there's no spiritualism. In the third movie, they bring Christianity back, but it's like it's just complete, like it's nonsense. It's just so that they've got something to believe in, so everybody doesn't start worshipping the bugs.
Yeah, I haven't seen the third one, so I don't know if I can comment on it. But in terms of what you mentioned about the commercials, one thing that's interesting is that again, like we mentioned, it's supposed to be hundreds of years in the future, but nobody even watches TV anymore. Nobody even sits through these infomercials anymore. So that's another thing that kind of puts it in its time, that it's like the future, if it just stayed the future in the 90s, whereas like they still have these weird infomercials 400 years from now advertising a live execution or something like that. But yeah, in terms of... I haven't seen the third one, but it would that definitely is kind of interesting. Noting that, like, is religion like the is it the kryptonite to kind of a materialistic a neoliberal system with that kind of just uses people as these cogs? Like, kind of I mentioned that before. All the characters in Starship Trooper, they kind of just seem to be really flat. They kind of don't really have any kind of a personality. They just are useful cogs within the system. And I guess a religion would kind of be what would bring them out of that, because it would be something that would actually provide them with some kind of a higher form of spirituality than just kind of simply going off and fighting in this war so that this giant federation can expand even further. But I haven't seen it, so I don't fully know.
What I was going to get into before, but me throat dried on us, was in the book. What this is what I thought was interesting. What they're doing in the book is you see this a lot, this trope. I mean, I will say, you know, the Hollywood thing where you've got the drill instructor and he's a real hard ass and he thinks all of his recruits are scum and this. I think that trope's been done to death. I mean, even in Starship Troopers. It again, like they're making a joke of it. The original one was the one in Full Metal Jacket. Like that generally was like mind blowing when he first came up. But it seems like they've done it so many times now. You know, like, oh, I'm the tough ball breaking drill instructor, and I'm gonna turn you into a new man and all of this. But in the book, what I think is interesting is that he actually explains what it is they're doing, and it's if you remove you take the individual off the street, the raw recruit, and he's going to have certain set of sort of things in his mind, things that he's worrying about. Can he pay the bills? What about his exams? What kind of clothes should he be wearing? And all of this crap that occupies the mind of the normal person on the street. And in the book, it's quite clear. Like they want to liberate the individual from that. So that when they say that you're going to be born again, they actually mean it. You're going to be born again as a blank slate. And psychologically, you're never going to have to worry about all of this mundane bullshit, because we've got a bigger task for you ahead. And once for that sort of act of liberation, you can really set about creating like a kind of higher, like a sort of samurai class, almost of a religious order. I mean, in this case, they're going to point them towards war. But I think it's an interesting thing to think about. Like if you take the individual and you just wipe their mind, you take the burden of all this mundane bullshit that people have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. They say, we're going to take care of that. Never worry about any of that stuff again. You don't have to worry about going to the shop to get your dinner. You don't have to worry about cooking and all of these things. All of that's taken care of you, so get it out of your mind. You're going to be focused now on being a super warrior and nothing else. Nothing else is going to get in the way of that. And I think there's something to be said for that. You can see how you can, not just in the case of warriors, you are going to end up with an elite class there. And I think you could do that with religion. I think that you could do that with priests. You could have a new priestly class. And it's interesting when you think of it that in the past, they would live separate and apart from it all.
So, yeah. Oh,
I like that. I can imagine that's a kind of Julius Evola metaphysics of war kind of thing. But I mean, I haven't read that, but I can imagine that's what he would be going for. That's how you get on the stage, is to creating a warrior kind of priestly caste above the norm, above the common herd. You've got to clean all of that crap out of their mind and get them at a young age as well.
Yeah, I will say on the note of the drill sergeant cliche, I did find it funny that it was that the drill sergeant was the same guy who played the captain of the guard in Shawshank Redemption. I thought that was kind of funny. I also did think it was funny how just over the top it was. Whereas in these other movies, the drill sergeant makes them do a bunch of push-ups. In this one, he literally breaks a guy's arm and then throws a knife through another guy's hand. So they are playing around with that cliche, which I thought was kind of funny. But in terms of what you said about like the warrior class, they actually have that in Warhammer 40K as well. The Space Marines are an entire race of man designed only to be a warrior. So they're like genetically modified to be bigger, and that their only conception of themselves is themselves as warriors and as themselves serving the emperor. Now, I used to play Warhammer 40K. I'm certainly not as into the lore as you are, but it is really interesting. I've always found the Imperium faction really interesting in Warhammer 40K, especially the kind of how they have the Space Marines creating this kind of almost like warrior samurai like race who are designed for war, but at the same time, which would be a bit different than Starship Troopers, that they actually do have a very deep kind of spirituality with them. So the cult of the Emperor in Warhammer 40K is their religion in many respects. I remember I used to play this Warhammer 40K video game, and every time you click on, you know those RTS games where you have like all the characters and you attack, you have a base and you build units and attack the other teams. You know these ones, right? So whenever you click on one of the characters in these games, they'll say something. So it'll be like, hello, sir, or hello, sire, or something like that. But in the Warhammer 40K one, for the Space Marines, they'd always say something like that was just so like, they would always say something that was really interesting. Like, I remember that one of them said that it's better to die for the Emperor than to live for yourself, or something like that. And I always found that aspect of Warhammer 40K so interesting, the kind of the almost warrior samurai like priest class, how they kind of merged this warrior race with this like very deep religiosity.
Yeah, I mean the Horus Heresy is purely secular. The idea that there's anything outside of the material is strictly forbidden. Like you don't even dare think that there's any such thing as ghosts or the supernatural or heaven or hell. It's purely like the Enlightenment, and then they move on, and it all collapses. It all goes to hell because it turns out that a metaphysical evil does exist, and it begins corrupting the legions. Horus, the War Master, and then he turns on. On the Empire itself, and you get this is 30K, and that's why when you get to 40K, the Empire of Man's like a bit of a shithole, because I mean, I don't want to get too carried away on this, but basically, and because of Logar, the humans realize that sort of scientific materialism just isn't enough in the face of the horrors which are coming at them. This idea where you can just reason your way out of it, use empiricism, it's not working anymore, because there's literally beings from another dimension which looks like hell taking over the galaxy. Like it is there and it is real, and so this means that they then have to basically they start worshipping the Emperor, because in such a brutal and savage galaxy universe, the only entity which can possibly protect them is the Emperor, and so they begin to worship the Emperor. They pick up Logar's book on it, and so when you get to 40K, this has already happened. This is the 30K is obviously long gone; it's in the past. But humanity has gone back to a deeply religious thing.
Yeah, it does make me think, like, so in a future where Starship Troopers actually existed, what would there be any would that kind of society ever actually come to an end? Would the militaristic neoconservative de facto liberal society of the future that looks like 90s America, would that actually ever come apart? And it probably would be through something like religion. I think, like you mentioned, that in the third movie, apparently they start worshiping the king, the bug god, or something like that. I think that eventually that would probably be how some kind of civilization like that would come to an end.
Well, a lot of the NRX lads will point out that what they call woke, and it's a fair point, that what you've got in, say, America is a religion. The cultural Marxism, sort of gay capitalism, all this stuff, anti-white stuff, that now bears the hallmarks of a religion. So this is why Warhammer is so interesting. So that would be the equivalent of the forces of chaos corrupting half the society. So then you'd get somebody like Distributist would say, if you don't also find religion, you're screwed. because this kind of Enlightenment era, everything's based on reason, it just isn't enough. So you can forget it. You're going to have some form of moral absolute to hold the line against this craziness. Again, it literally is like Warhammer. And I've come more and more to agree with them.
Yeah, and you know, I think that actually is another thing that puts a big contrast between now and the 1990s, is that the 90s were a very nihilistic decade. So it's fair to say that was not a religious time, whereas today, I was listening to Millennial Woes a few weeks ago, and what he said is that we are living in a quasi-religious time period. So we may not have an official religion, but then when you look at things like wokeism, it's become a de facto religion. So it might not have a god, but you have people in England kneeling down at a mural of a football player who's not even dead, who apparently had mean comments on the internet directed towards him. And they're literally kneeling down and signing their names and putting them on a mural. I mean, at least with the George Floyd one, at least the guy actually died. I mean, of course, it was bullshit and nobody should be worshiping him. But it seems like this is something that you can't describe it in any other way than religious. Just with all the kneeling down, the constant guilt, and how it's now just like superseded any kind of rationality. Whereas, you might have thought a few decades ago that changing a few policies here and there might be the answer to solving all these issues. Now, people have become so invested in that they're willing to create the most wacky conspiracy theories imaginable. That it's just like the inherent evil in every white person on earth that is why black people don't succeed at the same rates. This is something that's a lot more emblematic of a religion than something that's secular and atheistic like you would have seen in the 90s.
QAnon on the other side of the political divide, QAnon actually display a lot of religious traits as well. I remember during the crazy days over Christmas with the election and everything, and I'd watch the videos, Simon Parks and all of this, and they would actually talk in these terms of the good guys. Oh, the good guys are going to take control of this, and the good guys, don't worry, the good guys are infiltrating the this or that, and the bad guys know it, and the bad guys are going to look for it. So even today, I can guarantee if you go to BitChute, the top trending video will be like a QAnon thing telling them that Trump's doing this or that and that's all going to change anytime soon. One of the interesting messages of say something like Warhammer, and it seems in the third Starship Troopers movie that they're touching on that as well, is that the constant is religion. You may go through a brief sort of history of secularism and atheism and reason and science, but that will be the outlier. The historical norm is where people are just religious. It isn't that religion is just this hooky thing. It's the unreason, the irrationality of man, that is the norm. Not that he's going to use his reason and use empirical evidence to come to a conclusion. Anybody who looks at the world today and thinks that's the dominant narrative is completely stupid, in my opinion. Look, the world is completely insane. None of it, and we've never been more godless than Western civilization. So the idea that we can look around us today, I mean, I actually did a video on Warhammer and Peter Hitchens, you know. You go back, I mean, it touches on some of the things we were saying earlier about the 2000s and neoconservatism and spreading, because that was a, I mean, you've got it, the sort of the Israel side of it, but there was also just a general push to turn everywhere into like a liberal democratic shopping mall all across the Middle East and everywhere. And in fact, now you look on it, you look how naive and stupid that was. And Christopher Hitchens was this big hero. Oh, all of humanity is headed towards this direction, or you've got to be careful. As if we were going to head into this new age, like what they were talking about on Warhammer. We're going to have this crusade across the galaxy to purge all of this irrational thought. And you can see where we are now, that it may not have been like a formalized religion like Islam or the fundamentalist Christians that the Dawkins and Hitchens used to moan about in America, but all it means is it comes back in a different guise. It comes back in the form of the social justice stuff or the QAnon stuff or whatever it happens to be.
And one thing that I think I realized over the last year is just how quickly this stuff can develop, how quickly a new kind of religiosity can develop. You know, one criticism I would have of a lot of neo-reactionary thinkers is that a lot of them try to say that progressivism is a Protestant heresy, that it's something that kind of developed out of Christianity, which I think is incorrect. First of all, based on just, you know, I just disagree on the historical development of the ideology. But one thing that you can look at in contrast, though, is so wokeism is something that developed over, you know, 60, 70 years. You got like the figures like MLK and stuff like that in the 60s. And then they had all these movies and stuff that they released in Hollywood. And you know, it's something that built up over time. But then in contrast, you can look at the COVID stuff that's gone on in the last year or two. And this is something that's come out of absolutely nowhere. But for many people, it's taken on a new religiosity of its own. And it's always the same people. It's the same people who have fully bought into the woke agenda. It's always the same people who are just absolutely insane over COVID. You know, I just find it so uncanny, the people posting on social media about them getting the vaccine as if they've almost been reborn in some way, as if they've almost like gone through some kind of baptism. You know, a lot of like the normies that I speak to, especially the older ones, all they ever talk about anymore is case numbers and vaccines and, this variant. And like, it's taken on a new kind of like religion that seems to have just been created overnight.
Yeah. Yeah. And the system knows how to manipulate them, knows how to manipulate them perfectly well. Maybe it always did. But in the past, you can at least see that it was some kind of, in the past, let's just assume that you go back hundreds of years and there was, because, you know, people will say it's always been top down. So it was top down during the when Catholicism was great, and it was top down when the Church of England was being born, and all of this, it always is top down. So that means that today it's top down again, except the difference is today it's almost like an inversion of because it doesn't lead to a healthy functioning civilization in the way that say standard religion did in the past. Instead, it leads to it's inverted, and it leads to like the just chaos and destruction. So how are you gonna get out of this by using reason when they aren't reasonable? They're not going to listen to reason. The amazing lies that gets peddled and people just lap it up, partly because of a power trip. But the point is, like, they're not going to listen to reason. So I don't know what the centrists are supposed to do.
Yeah, and I guess, looping that back into the film, that is kind of the human norm. And what you're left with is that the only way to actually bring liberalism and centrism to the world is to invade them and basically wipe out all other forms of ways of life, because that's not the human norm, as you know many of them mistakenly believe. I know earlier you mentioned Carl Schmitt. One thing that's interesting that Schmitt said was about universalism, and he says that what's the most dangerous thing about universalism is that it creates this kind of moral paradigm which declares all of its enemies, not only enemies in a political sense that this person has different interests than me, but they declare this person an enemy of all of humanity. So someone who's anti-universalist is not only my enemy, they're the enemy of all of humanity. And this essentially justifies almost any kind of horrific actions directed against them. And that really is kind of what universalism always ends up running back into. So with communism, it was like that. They said, we're going to create this international proletariat dictatorship, workers' paradise, and anyone who's against that is the enemy of humanity. And it's very much the same with the progressivism and the wokeism today, that anyone who's against that is not only an enemy of me politically, this person is an enemy of humanity. And it always brings you back to kind of this universalistic liberal worldview always brings you back to that. The only way that you can actually impose that on the world, because it's not the human norm, is through just conquest.
Yeah. Yeah. By doing exactly what they would accuse religions of doing. They will say, well, just look at all the bloodshed and horrors because of religion. But then you look at how liberalism behaves around the world. How is it any different at the end of the day? It's just that it's godless. And in the name of profits and crap consumer products, so and in a way it gets us back to Starship Troopers, where you can see that it's in those circumstances it's very handy to have an external enemy. It's very what you may call a big bad. The big bad other is just over the horizon, so you've got to get your act in order, because the big bad. And in the case of Starship Troopers, the fact that he's just used the arachnids, the bugs, it's deliberately ridiculous, but the point stands perfectly well as a sort of exploration of politics and power, where they've all been just misdirected, really. I will say that the life, his dad is a multimillionaire, and it does look very comfortable, but hollow and empty at the same time.
Yeah, he says at the beginning that he wants to go off and see the galaxy, and that the kind of life as just being this rich merchant kid but not a citizen is really not going to satisfy him, that he has to go off and actually become a citizen, because I guess ultimately that kind of lifestyle was actually really empty. And I think looking back on the 90s, I know a lot of people are very nostalgic for the 1990s, but I was born during the 1990s, and I'm not a 90s kid. I was too young to remember them in any real way, but I do kind of look back on them and see them as kind of a depressing time, one that really did seem very nihilistic and life didn't really have much of a meaning. Not that it's improved since then, but I don't view it as a golden age for many reasons.
The 90s in terms of movies and culture, It clearly wasn't. It clearly wasn't as good as the 80s. But in the 90s, the kind of postmodernism stuff, which we got really into in the Incredibles stream, I think that in the 90s that was kind of novel. The irony and the snark and the know-it-all attitude, the sort of that Daria meme that EA talks about, all of that was. It still seemed kind of fresh back in the 90s. But then, as we just discussed the other time, the problem is it makes it really difficult for anything to kind of emerge from it, because all you're ever going to be met with is snark. But when it first arrived in the 90s, it did seem kind of new and original, because I suppose when deconstruction is kind of novel at first. The problem is, like, eventually something new and fresh has to happen, and it hasn't. So and in the 90s, when it was like, you know, you look at what I was talking about before, like something like that Con Air, or even like the Tarantino type stuff as well. It all does have a similar mindset behind it. I mean, I could watch any of them and point out like how this is like very 90s. There's a black and white movie made by Steven Spielberg, which kind of put the damper on everything. There's nothing ironic about that, but that'll have to be for Odyssey sometime. anyway, this is our ninth. Have you got any more parting shots on Starship Troopers?
I don't know. I'll say that it was a decent movie. Fun action. Full of a lot of good 90s cliches, interesting aesthetic, and it really is a movie of its time. I will say, you know, the irony was a bit too much for me. I couldn't get into the characters and the plot too much, but nonetheless, still a fun movie, so, you know, one that people might want to check out.
I do, yeah. I mean, it's funny when you look back on the movies we've done, because I do like my kind of pulpy action type movies, and I was actually stuck for a choice. I didn't know what to go for. I mentioned on another one that I was Heat, but I'm thinking about doing a standalone video essay on Heat for the YouTube channel. I mean, I've been a very busy boy recently. I was on the James American Psychos. Somebody says in the chat, it has been kind of done a lot, American Psycho, but I'll see. But Rob Yeager's analysis of Starship Troopers is very interesting, well worth looking at. It is, but Rob's a bit weird about you linking out this stuff. He's got disclaimers on his videos and stuff that says, like, you're not allowed to link his stuff unless you ask him, which I thought was really weird. Did you enjoy Starship Troopers? Yes, I really do. For all its snark and all of that, I like it. Yeah, American Psycho has been done. Do Hardcore Morgoth? I'm not sure what that is. A Bug's Life, yeah, is an interesting one. I want to maybe do the one on Heat. I've been a busy chap recently. I did a video that I was on the James Dellingbull podcast, and then now I've done this. I've got another video in the works about the Lefty YouTube that I might wrap up in the next day or two. So for now, I think I'm going to have a bit of a breather and a bit of a break from the internet for a little bit. But this is our ninth classic movies. So what do we got planned for the Big Ten?
Well, I had a few ideas, but I thought a good idea for the 10th. We can talk about this later. It's not finalized, but I thought a good idea would be actually looking at two movies, analyzing the 1967 Bonnie and Clyde movie versus the 2019 movie, The Highwaymen, because this is one of the very interesting examples of a movie that I've been very rare examples of a movie that the current like remake is a lot less pause and is a lot more like right wing and reactionary than the classic movie. And it really is interesting if you look at the contrast between the two. I thought that would be a good topic for a stream. So that might be the one we do next. But I have a few other ideas as well. So we can think about that. Someone also said do Gone with the Wind. I think that will be a future one too.
I just want to say that The Adventures of Baron von Munchausen, that could very well that may well be one for the future. Like that's a lovely film. But the Dellingpool thing is on my Odyssey channel and it's on his Odyssey channel. I mean, you know, I've got a lot of stuff up on Odyssey now, which you don't see on YouTube. I post it. I make these little posts, and it seems like if YouTube detects that you're using like a foreign link, it kind of buries it. So like almost nobody knows that I've posted. I'll post it on Telegram. If you support me through donations on Patreon and Subscribestar, everything I do off platform gets posted on there, so you get it. But it's still, when I do like these little posts to tell people that, you know, on the channel where you can write a post, it seems like YouTube just bury them if it's off platform. They don't, because, and I can understand it, it's because they're taking people off the site. But So the, yeah, I've got more, a lot, quite a bit of stuff up on Odyssey on the Morecast and things like that. Thoughts on Fiddler on the Roof? I've actually done a blog post at Morgoth's Review on that a long time ago, and I'm not going to see anything more about that on YouTube. You'll have to go and check out the blog post. So, you're right, we're going to do Bonnie and Clyde versus the sort of the hippie version versus the stern Kevin Costner one. Anyway, it's a nice little chance because I don't get the chance to interact just like this, read the chat. I should probably do a stream more often where I just kind of banter on with the lads in the chat there. Nice to do a bit of housekeeping. So I think we'll wrap that up. Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. I've got a super chat that I didn't read there. A's Evil Twin, the Boomer Slayer for $10. I've been working 7/12 at a fracking well site and binge watching Yowl's channels and Yowl's other appearances have provided much needed quality content. Thank you, fellas. Well, thank you too, A's Evil Twin, the Boomer Slayer. And I think I'll bid you all a good evening, enjoying the sunshine, and I'll catch you next time. See you later.